Welcome to Mind Space Minimal,
a podcast exploring the connections between consciousness, lifestyle, wellness, and aesthetics. We're your hosts. I'm Jessica Yatrovsky.
And I'm Daniel Ryan. We hope you enjoy this episode.
And today we're going to be talking about right vocation and nepotism
and opportunity.
And
careers. and who you know and who you don't know.
And who you pull the ladder up right before they get on after you get to the top.
Whose bootstraps you pull up and whose you don't and which ones are yours anyway. Yeah. Who knows?
Who do you hitch your wagon to?
Whose star is hitched to your wagon? Whose coattails are currently hanging on the back of your jacket? The important questions.
So I was like, I'm going to go into this with nothing. Like, I started to think.
I got stuff.
I know you do. That's why I was like, yeah. I think I'm just going to, I have like just two things. And then I was just going to kind of let this slide.
Let it fly.
Yeah, let it fly, let it slide. I was like, oh, right vocation, because this has come up before. We've talked about this a lot. Like, but in jest, like you mentioned it, like very, like, you know.
Casually,
yeah. And so I looked up vocation. Okay, let me tell you the order I did it in. I looked up right vocation, just as a lark, like, I'm just going to put right vocation in and see, like, what somebody tells me about, you know, what they think. And I kept finding religious shit.
Sure.
I shouldn't say shit. Religious paraphernalia in the form of writing.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, that's so weird, because it was like, I just keep like bringing up all these articles and I would start reading them like, oh, interesting. Then I was like, wait, that doesn't track. And I like scroll up to the top and it'd be like, you know, christiansomething.com, whatever. And it was saying like really weird stuff too that I was like, that doesn't make sense for right vocation or like whatever. And it was like deep and dark, some of it, but like not in like a cool way that you and I would be like, oh, that's interesting. It was like straight up did not make sense.
Right.
So I was like, let me actually Google vocation, right, and get down to the nitty-gritty. So it says vocation is an occupation to which a person is especially drawn or for which they are suited, trained, or qualified. People can be given information about a new occupation through orientation. Okay. And then it says, though now often used in non-religious contexts, the meanings of the term originated in Christianity. So I guess that's why I kept finding those articles. And I was like, okay. And that's where I left it. There you go. Off to you.
Awesome. Yeah.
Get away.
It's funny. No, I appreciate your starting us there, because I've spent enough time thinking about the word and talking about the word that I actually kind of forgot about the religious origins and all of the starting points for the idea of vocation or right vocation, and had never looked at some of the stuff that you bring up there. So I totally appreciate that reminder and foundation, because I wouldn't, you know, as we are talking about it today, I wouldn't have really emphasized those historical roots for the subject. You know, frankly, I would have talked about it, and we'll talk about it in a moment, a little more casually and a little bit more in a secular modern context, where, you know, I think actually the ideas are very useful and important if we just strip away all the parts of it we don't need and that don't apply for the world that we live in. But, you know, seriously, thank you for bringing that up, because I totally forgot. It's like, it's a very religious idea, actually.
How do you define vocation, like, now?
Well, you know, vocation, actually,
like, personally.
Yeah, so vocation, I think of as, you know, very similar to the way that it was put by you just a moment ago, as a trade, skill, job, or work that one is particularly skilled, trained, and talented for that has a direct passion and interest and curiosity that applies to this thing in this way, so that the work is tailored and unique to the individual in a way that makes sense. That, you know, I'm sure is not anywhere near an actual definition of vocation, but yeah. And then right vocation, I think of as what I just said, maybe just to the next level where you have, I don't know. I mean, you know, this is actually what I wanted to talk to you about today and figure out the nuances of
your life's purpose.
Yeah. I mean, it could be actually, yeah, but that could be like, you know, quote unquote, one's life's purpose. Mm-hmm. But that is I think that's an idea that can be kind of illusory and even be a trickster for us sometimes too.
This might be the worst or the best thing to be talking about as we're still surviving a pandemic. Yeah. So I don't know. For myself, I actually don't know, because there's some days that I feel really positive about opportunities and there are other days that I feel like very just listless.
Sure.
About life and vocation and career and purpose.
So, well, you know, one of the things that I had on my mind coming into this conversation was that I think both you and I are fortunate people, we're lucky people that can say too that our work is, generally speaking, of our choosing and of our making, even if we don't get to choose all the little tasks that goes along with our work and our careers and stuff like that. You know, there's still a lot of, I mean, actually being a small business owner or a large business owner, an entrepreneur of any kind, is a hell of a lot of responsibility no matter what you do. Mm-hmm. So it's not like it's easy, and definitely not saying that, but just that you and I have vocations that we've kind of created for ourselves in our own ways, in our own governance, and you know, how unique that really is, how special that really is, versus the experience of a lot of people out there, everybody out there, who has their own kind of sense of what we're talking about. And then that, you know, vocation and right vocation, again, just to kind of throw it out there, what I had in my head coming into today is, you know, as we've said already, when somebody has the right job and the right work for them, whatever that might mean, you know, that somebody's skills and talents are matched by the work and the job that they do. And if we have that, it's often said, we get, you know, platitudes like, well, you'll never work a day in your life. You know, you'll be happy. Oh. And never. Yeah, so
a Jewish person did not write that.
Right on.
Sorry. Don't mean to bring religion into it, but.
Well, you're a Jewish lady, so you can say that.
Everything is a hassle.
I'm a goy. I'm told I'm a mensch, though.
Yeah, you are.
Thank you. Thank you. It's an honor.
Everything is, you're put upon. You know, even if you love it, you're like, I don't know. There's something kind of going on when talking in artist circles now with that same kind of attitude, like, oh, if you love it, you know, it's easy. You know, if you're passionate about it, it's easy. It doesn't feel like work. But then there's another side of it where the attitude is, if it didn't feel like a struggle, then it wasn't work of importance.
I hear that, but I actually think that's a pretty dangerous attitude to subscribe to, because if we hold that as our standard, then it's like we have to suffer for everything, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, because the art is suffering.
Sure.
But that's not, I feel like in modern times it shouldn't be, though. Like in way back in the day when people did have to struggle when they were making these works of art. And I mean, think about what the climate was like back in the
day. Just no air conditioning. I mean, how about that?
I was just about to say, right. There's no indoor plumbing.
We can't even imagine. You know what I mean? There were all different types of, like, we can't even imagine what labor was 100 years ago, let alone 500 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, you're not going to, like, I'm going to go paint. You know, it's like, of course, I'm sure that was like you were suffering a lot.
But this is, you know, this is just it, actually. Coming back to the nuance and complexity of our modern world, A, as we both know, it's not that binary at the end of the day. We can have work we love that can be easy in some ways and still work our asses off and work very, very hard at other parts. And of course, there will be parts of our work we'll like more than others.
And we could have shitty days too.
Within the
career that we love.
You know, here's, you know, my question, which is more of a philosophical musing for us to kind of just play with and batter around like a couple of cats here for a moment. Yeah, as you mentioned nepotism before, I always think it's such a thin line and such a kind of funny conversation even because...
Oh?
Well, listen, in every business, it's quote unquote who you know, right? And speaking for myself, you know, my father is the reason I do what I do to a certain extent. I inherited his work. Mm-hmm. You know, I did not inherit a business that was generating any money whatsoever, for the record, just to dispel any ideas. My practice as it was and as it is, I have done. You know, I didn't inherit anything like a full calendar or anything like that. But
it wasn't like a McDonald's, like you were like a franchise. Exactly.
Yeah, I couldn't manager, step into it.
It just runs itself. Like,
everybody, this is Mr. Ryan. He's taking over today. Yeah. But you know, so I have this in my story. You know, I mean, there was something in my family that was very meaningful to me that I stepped into. If I didn't have talent and skill for that, I would know by now. Everybody would know by now. You know, it would have ended.
Do you think if your dad was still alive that you'd be doing this?
I think it'd be way different. You see, that's a very...
Because there's competition between men.
Big time. Oh my gosh.
But then there's also like the dad that has the... Like say the dad has the major career, the mother has the major career, that they want their child to also be like them. There's also that.
Yeah.
Like I had that in my family where my dad wanted both me and my sister to follow his footsteps. So I'm curious, like did your dad ever express that to you when he was alive?
In everything that you just mentioned, from the competition to the desire to follow in footsteps and everything in between was expressed at some point. So, you know, suffice it to say, it was confusing at times and like every parent-child relationship, just layered and, you know, had a lot of stuff. So I wish I could say it was clearer, Jessica, but I totally, as we know now, I ended up inheriting his work and taking it over. There was a plan for me to take over his practice while he was still alive. So it was something that absolutely we talked about and had his blessing. But I know there were a lot of complex feelings for him around that.
For you going into the field, like protecting you from...
It was all of the above. I think he was threatened by me. I think he wanted me to follow in his footsteps. I think he didn't know how he felt about it some days. I think my taking over his practice suggested to him that he was dying in a way that he didn't care for. You know, that's ultimately what it is. And I am tremendously empathetic to that. Nobody wants to think they're obsolete, outmoded, or done. And he's
a real Greek tragedy going on
for fucking real. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, without wanting to turn this whole thing into a personal therapy session for me, all of that stuff was definitely in there.
Hey, I'm a yoga block therapist today.
All of that being in there, the thing that I was throwing out there for us to talk about is really where's the line between I work hard and I know the right people and you know, baseless, graceless nepotism. You know, how do we know? How do we know which is which?
Well, this is hard because we're also two white people talking.
Very true. Yes.
So.
And everything I do is painted with that privilege.
I would say, I mean, I have a really strong reaction to nepotism because I feel like it worked against me when I decided that I was going to follow a career that wasn't in medicine. So I feel like if I were to have gone full on into medicine, I would have benefited greatly from the perks of nepotism because of my father and other family members in that, what do you call that? Career, vocation?
It's your career path?
Well, what is it that they do? Their job? Yeah. Like, I don't
career
know.
Guidance?
Yeah, what they do for a living. Yeah, like if I would have followed that, doors would have been open. Okay. I would have gone to Columbia just like my dad did, and I would have followed in his footsteps. And I would have probably pursued, if I were going to go into his field, probably like oral surgery, because that was more of like the what he saw for me. But really fucking grossed me out, man. And I couldn't handle it. But, you know, I took from him what I have talked about in previous episodes, and beauty and aesthetics, and carried those things over into my career as an artist. So that was still very much a conversation in our household. But when I think about nepotism, going back to that, I think I don't really feel, I don't know, knowing the right people, I think is heavily tied to, in my mind, your family and its influence, its the social circles you're connected to within that family. I do have wealthy people in my family and famous people in my family. I don't know if you even know this, but I don't talk about it. And I've never like used it to advance in my own career.
Until now.
Until I'll be calling you guys. Like, and it's, but it's never like, because I don't think like that. If something happens like naturally within a friends group, like somebody knows an editor or an artist or curator or something like that, like that's just like I don't know, like let's make up our own vocabulary. That's just like natural nepotism. Like you just are in that circle of friends and you're all rising at the same time. And but maybe they were benefiting from a different kind of nepotism because maybe they came from a different family and they were already ahead and already had those connections and you just happened to have gone to school with them. So that's why I'm also like, I tell people like, don't go to art school, but then I'm like, go to art school because of the connections and who you'll meet.
It's so true though. And I mean, that's, it's such a balance. I would say go to art school or go to school in general if you trust yourself to take advantage of those things. If you feel like you're introverted or shy or going through a tough time and might not socialize and take advantage of those programs, it might not be worth it. That's a digression.
Here's a definition for nepotism. It's the practice among those with power or influence of favoring relatives or friends, especially by giving them jobs.
There you go. Thank you for the definition, by the way. We should be doing that.
Now I think that I've definitely benefited from nepotism for sure, but like not in a bad way. I mean, if you know a friend of a friend and they're like, hey, do you know anyone who could do this? Yeah, sure. Like then next thing you know, you're on a film set and you're working.
Well, that's what I say, again, appreciating what you're saying, why it's, I think it's so fuzzy, oftentimes silly, but other times also very important because, you know, without wanting to needlessly go down any kind of roads, you know, the conversation around privilege and where it's unchecked and untoward and unfair, unjust, et cetera, is a really important one in this context because the definition of what you just read there, you know, nepotism and, you know, having opportunity because you have family or friends. I also, in the same breath, again, want to be like, man, I hope everyone has that opportunity. I hope everyone has a friend or a family member or someone that they can turn to or lean on to ask for help, not to ask for some unfairly earned opportunity, of course, but
our big old loan.
Yeah, but to ask for help and to ask for support. It's a part of this, which is very, very important, which we don't talk about in the equation of just the nepotism itself, is the way to actually thank people for the opportunities and support they give us is mm-hmm. to succeed and to make yes. and to make good on it. You know, so mm-hmm. if somebody does me a favor by giving me a great career opportunity, I might thank them with a nice note and some flowers and a bottle of something or whatever it might be. But mm-hmm. the proper thank you is actually showing up and succeeding and being excellent at whatever yeah. that thing is, so that their vouching for me is honored, so that nobody is embarrassed or, you know, right. sorry that they asked to work with that guy. You know what I mean?
And you'll never get to benefit from that again. No, 100%. I also think of like the cultural aspect of this. Like, I come from an immigrant family. Mm. So like, think about it back in the day. It's like always like, did you hear about a job? I got to, you know, here's the job, get the job. I got a guy, go talk to the guy.
Right.
And you got the job. Just go talk to right. the guy. That kind of thing. Yeah. You know what I mean? I got, like, it's already
that's
set
how
up.
I got my first couple jobs, the way you just said it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you have a Jewish mother, it's like, you know, just she already set it up for mm. you. You have the job. You just got to go get it. But that's because I want to be careful with the way that I word this, because I don't want to just be like flippant with it. But it's like, if you know that your child is capable of doing X, Y, and Z, and mm-hmm. the parent is going to be like, my kid can do this, and then send you along to do it. So it's like, okay, you know, like that's cool. Love that about parents. And it's different than nowadays where there's like helicopter parents.
Right.
Where I feel like helicopter parents, like, I mean, look at how we had the whole like college scandal.
Yeah, thing. You were reminding me of right? that as you were talking. And that's probably.
It's like, that's not what I'm talking about here. Like, my parents yeah. were not oh, no, like no, that no. at all.
If anything, I would say that's the most extreme and ludicrous example of an abuse of power and privilege. You know, it's like that yeah. story, which we're now all aware of and can look up. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that if anything, with nepotism as an adult now within, like, I'm going to speak specifically to our creative mm-hmm. industries. When I'm in positions of power, when I open up my Rolodex where I have to put together a team or recruit other artists, my first aim is to go and look for people to put on my team or to like recruit that are BIPOC or LGBTQ plus, because I know that they're probably not going to be the first people to get an opportunity. So I kind of like have reframed over the years, like how I recruit friends or make recommendations for jobs. Now, of course, like I'm going to put somebody forward for a position or a job or like placement within a group of whatever I'm doing based on criteria, like merit, all of those things. Like they have to fit all of those categories, any person, right? But then I'm going to use another tier where I'm placing people that would be less likely to get that opportunity. So it's like using white privilege, I guess what you would call allyship, advocacy, I don't know. Because that's something that happens behind closed doors. That's something that happens in your head. Like in a second, Dan, I could just decide to hire you and not someone sure. else who's more qualified and maybe is like a person of color. You know what I'm saying? But I don't, because I realize that I'm just going to be perpetuating like a non-diverse team of people that I'm going to continue to work with. And I'm like, I don't want to do that. Oh. I don't want to veer off. Like I'm trying to keep it on the nepotism sort of train of like how you can make nepotism fair. That makes yeah. sense. Like use my nepotism.
Does well,
that
yeah. sense? And
I know,
exactly. That's just the thing. I mean, being in the weeds with this subject is in such nuanced and subtle territory that the vocabulary mm-hmm. for is changing as we speak.
Yeah.
I think mostly in good ways. And it really is, again, it's so delicate, because what we're talking about, if we just look at it in one direction, is, you know, helping out our friends and family members. And if we just tilt half a degree in any other direction, it's so delicate. You know, we don't need to take a 180-degree flip. If you just turn your head, It's nepotism. And, you know, it's like, it's unfair, unjust, it's evil, it's whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't think we're going to solve that today. I don't think what? We're going to solve that. But what I...
You're what, fucking kidding. Why do you think I put this on the calendar?
What I think we can do, and I could be wrong. You could be right. Honestly, what I think the best thing, but what I'll just say, I think my most focused point and message here would be to a young person or somebody looking for some clarity in what we're talking about is to find the work that is right for you. And I mean, I think this is the thing that you and I can and perhaps should speak to as we're starting to wind down is what have we learned about choosing our careers and our work the way we have? You know, what do you feel you have the right vocation for who you are at this point in your life?
No, you're going to ask me that. You're going to say, we're going to wind down. And then you're going to pose that.
Yeah, there's... And thank you for listening to this episode. No, I'm just kidding.
What was the question?
It was
again?
Like three questions wrapped in 45 minutes of me yes. monologuing. Well, the last part was, do you feel that you have the right vocation at this point in your life? If so, why not? What would you change? And the other part is, what have you learned? What would you tell somebody else about choosing your career, choosing your work, things like that?
Well, okay. So I think that you should experiment a lot when you're younger with everything and really kind of figure that out and what you feel pulled towards, go towards and like continue to investigate. I think that, okay, no regrets, but if I were to go back in time, I think I would have just fully pursued from the very beginning, full on, and not split my attention between several things, which is like a classic Gemini thing. So it's just like, I also don't want to take it back because like I know so much about science. I know so much about art. I know so much about like spirituality. So like I wouldn't want to go back and like change that necessarily. But I'm also like a lot older and like less established in some personal life goals than a lot of people my age are and younger. So I would say like if you find something that you're passionate about and that you're excelling in, just go towards it at full speed and see how that feels. Because if you do it and then you realize once you're there and you've like conquered the mountain of whatever your career is and it disinterests you, you can move on to the next thing, but at least you like went towards it with gusto, you know, and conquered it. But like, I can't help you. Like, I don't know if my information is actually useful because I was really pulled when I was a younger person. I always grew up thinking I wanted to be an artist. I wanted to be a famous painter. Like I wanted to be a famous painter. And but my dad would always be like, and you want to be a doctor too, right? Like whispering that in my ear.
Ah, dad.
Yeah. And I did, but not really, even though I was like interested in science. So doing the dual major thing took a toll on me and it made me a little bit resentful later in life because now I'm like, I spent so much time taking all of these science credits when I could have like been done with my art degree, went on to my master's degree, moved to New York even that much quicker. But that's life, right? And you learn things along the way and you have other grand experiences that all inform who you are now. And I think that if I were to experience some of the successes that younger artists I know experienced, I would, knowing my personal self, would hate my life. Like if I got what I thought I wanted at 25, yuck.
I hear that.
Like, because you don't know who you are personally. And I think until you're like in the full thrust of your 30s, do you really like begin to understand like the gravity of what life is going to like be doing to you, or like how you're moving through it, or how you can move through it, or ways to navigate how to learn about yourself. And I feel like if I were to become a famous artist at 25, that would have been very disruptive to my personal growth, my spiritual growth, would have just fucked with a lot of things that, because I mean, think about like, what is it, like your jaw still like is not fully grown until you're 25 or something like that. Like, I don't know, like things are still growing and hormones and all of that. And I see a lot of artists when they're like, which I fucking hate this. It's like, I don't know if I mentioned this to you, but that whole like, you know, 30 under 30, 20 under 20, those lists, it's like, I want to see artists over 40, artists over 50. I want to see more articles about that, because I feel like you're really like in your skin. You know, you're like really in yourself after those ages, and you don't have that pressure put on you like you do when you're a young person in any occupation. Like, say you're, you know, 30 under 30 surgeon, 20 under 20, like, you know, photographer, I mean, like whatever. Yeah, that
and who
is,
want, or, who would want to see anybody in the medical fields who's like under the age of 30, you know?
No.
And I mean, that's a complaint we hear about a lot. Not. It's like, you know, I went to the hospital and my doctor was like 25 years old, you know, it's like.
Yeah, it's like, I'm glad you're a prodigy, but I want to know that you've been opening bodies.
I want to know your experience. I mean, the whole 30 under 30 thing, I think we can agree, is to sell magazines. Yeah. It has nothing to do with professional fields.
It is, but it's really unfair because it places this emphasis on youth and that you're going to be your most productive in your youth. And I think that I've been most happier over 35.
Agreed. But now we're talking about ageism. But yes. Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, but like when you think about like vocation and like working in a field and like fully being in yourself, I think that age has a lot to do with it. So that's why I say, like, if you have the opportunity to go full throttle like into your career at a young age without stopping, that might be something interesting to pursue. If you want to take a break, that might be another interesting thing to pursue. But like, really listening to yourself, because I think that I was pulled in two directions, and I will never know, right? This is like the Dolores Cannon thing. Like, if I made that choice and I broke off and I was that person that I made and then I broke off, it's like, parallel universe, what's happening? Am I fourth dimensioning somewhere else and like living the best life? And then I have to tell you the story because I think it's very pertinent. I was in a Clubhouse room the other night. This is always how it starts. People who don't know still don't know who Clubhouse is.
It is a person.
What Clubhouse is Clubhouse is a social media app where it's audio only and you talk to strangers and you also talk to people you know. So I was in a Clubhouse room and we were going down. I was talking to the two guys and we were all talking about, they were assessing what other famous people I looked like. And we went down a list. It was very welcomed.
Okay.
Like,
okay.
This was not a sexist
discussion. This sounds uncomfortable.
No, this wouldn't be happening because we brought it up because this guy was like, has anyone ever told you look like this person? I said, I get that all the time.
Okay. Sounds like fun. Said,
yeah, it was fun. because then we did it to the other two guys. So it's like, I always get this person. Then I always get that person. Then I always get that. There's like four people that I get. That people think that I look like. And so the other guy was like, oh my God, you really do. So they're Googling these four different people, right? And every time I go into the laundromat, I look like one person to that guy all the time. And he reminds me. And then when I go to my oral surgeon, she's like, it's uncanny. And I'm like, I'm about to get gas right now. Like, you're freaking me out that you're freaked out that I look like this person. So yeah, so I get these things. And I always make the joke back to them, well, I wish I had their bank account, you know, like, you know.
But good one.
So we were going through all of these people that I look like or have or angles of myself that I look like at different times. And then we kind of went like next level in this discussion. And we weren't talking about this for very long. It was just like a casual chat. And then I said, and you know what I just realized, guys? In a sliding doors, whatever the fuck, I'm the poor one of these four celebrities. Oh. Like, not poor, but you know what I mean? Like, I'm the stepchild that's like last in line out of these four women.
Fair enough.
And it was, and we all started really laughing so hard because he was like, I feel like you just set us up on the best stand-up comedy routine either, because we were Googling these women, we had things to say about, you look like all of these women, and then you just like put the nail in the coffin when you were like, ba-dum-bum, like, and I'm the least successful out of all these women. But I don't actually feel that I'm not rich or successful. I'm not saying that. I'm just pointing out that I don't know where I was going with this before.
Do we get to know who the four women are?
No, because like, what if someone sees this video and they're going to be like, she doesn't look like that. Right. I mean, do you want to know?
I'm curious.
So I get Natalie Portman a lot. I do not look like Natalie Portman right now. Like maybe. Like,
sure. Yep. Oh, exactly like her. Yes.
I think it's because of my mole. So I get Natalie Portman. I get Julia Roberts when I smile.
I see it. Yeah. I'd throw that one out there. Sure.
Squint your eyes.
Sure.
I get Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Okay.
Which actually, when someone told me that, it freaked me out because I actually saw myself in her.
Yeah.
A friend of mine on a film set once was like, because we were new friends, we were becoming friends. And she says, I have to like... Can I tell you something? Like, I don't want to be weird or anything. She's like, but you look like my cousin, like a lot. And my cousin is Jennifer Jason Leigh.
There you go.
And like, it's uncanny. She's like, your mannerisms, like all the stuff, like your, it's like, she goes, I'm freaking out right now. So anyways, we became friends after that. But that, and then the last person is Emilia Clarke.
Okay, yeah.
And that's the one that the oral surgeon always tells me. The woman, and then and it's funny because several places that I go to get like self-care done, they'll look up from the register and be like, "Oh my god, you look like the Khaleesi." And I was like, "Who the fuck is that?" Cuz I never watched Game of Thrones. And so I can kind of see it, but like out of all of those four lovely women, like, I don't know who I'd want to look like. They're all, like, amazing. But you'd have to see me in person. This is – you guys are going to see this video and be like, she looks like a hobo.
No.
Can we say hobo?
I think we can say hobo. But it's
– derelict?
I would go so far as to say it's not warranted in this case.
No, I mean, but, like, I look nerdy. I look regular. I'm fine with the way I look. I'm just saying that there are moments – not on this Zoom fucking video. I'll look right into the video. Like, I don't look like that on Zoom. But in person, I have aspects of these different people. So to your point that I just totally took off topic majorly, because we're going to talk about Dolores Cannon eventually on another episode. Yeah. It's coming up in the schedule. But I think, and also going back on another episode where you were talking about how like all of these pieces come apart and then they try to find each other again.
Oh, yeah. The Soulmates episode.
Yeah. I think that that's happening sometimes because you're seeing little flickers of people's like appearance as their consciousness in someone else. Like you to me, and I think a lot of people have told you this, you look like Jared Leto. You have major Jared Leto vibes. I mean, now everyone's going to immediately start fucking Googling you. Yeah. It's Daniel Ryan, CRT, HRT. So go look for him.
I mean, it's...
Wait, is it HRT or CRT?
DanielRyanCRT.com is the website. But
yeah,
I've gotten that one before.
Yeah, you...
But that's also, I think it's fair to say, is like only so true. Like, I don't think I actually look like Jared Leto. I think...
Like, not right now as I look at you in the Zoom.
Yeah, I mean...
But you have that... You have vibes of that. Who do you get? Who's your celebrity doppelganger?
You know, what's funny is it's changed through life. It's changed consistently through life. And, of course,
it
used to happen way more when I was a young person, too, because not only was I acting, where all you do is compare yourself to fucking other actors. It's like, it's actually quite ridiculous what you do as a young actor.
Jeffrey Dahmer vibes today with your glasses.
Yeah, cool. I'm giving myself Jeffrey Dahmer vibes today. Apparently, that's just the vibe today.
Who do you get?
Well, when I was...
Dodge the question.
Listen, when I was young, I'm forgetting a bunch. The thing is it would change...
As you give me your profile.
I was going for three quarters. Shit. I overcompensated. Mm. Yeah. No, it would change. It was like every year. And, you know, most of the time I would hear some name of some actor and be like, oh, that's good. Oh, wow. That's like, that sounds like somebody I'd like to look like. It never led to work. Nobody ever paid me for it.
Right. Cause you don't want to like, I'll hire you because you look like Leto. It's like, no, we're going to hire Jared Leto.
Yeah, and you know, it didn't work ultimately, at least at that part of my life, me acting for...
Didn't you have a small modeling
career? I did have a small modeling career. Okay. Thank you for asking, Jessica. very small, but it was a real thing that happened.
Wait, is this the episode we find out that we're meant to be entertainers?
Oh my gosh, finally. Fuck. Finally.
No one's listening. It's okay.
Yeah. And I mean, like all the odd jobs and shit. Yeah. There was a modeling chapter. There was an acting chapter. There was a long background work chapter. You know, whatever. This is like young person in the city stuff that we both know about. That coming back to no regrets, you know.
Rugrats.
No rugrats. Yeah, but this is definitely a chapter of my life when I'm searching, looking for who the hell I am.
No regrets, but I have them.
Well, no, I mean, I don't think we do. I think it's wisdom and experience and hindsight and all of those other things. But this is actually, so I'm going to bring us to a close, but I think that we should have a part two of this conversation because, you know, we have wandered into some rich territory here in terms of both our personal experiences and also what it means to create your own work and, you know, hopefully to do so joyfully. But I'll just finish by saying, actually, I really don't. I was talking about this recently. I don't wrestle with regret. And I definitely, there are a couple significant crossroads in my past that I look at where I say now for sure, not that I did the wrong thing, not at all, but just that there were a couple other options available to me that I probably could have experimented with, coming back to what you said about experimentation being essential, being so important. Yeah. And, you know, as both of us know too, it's hell out there. You know, people aren't getting paid. Listen, I mean, like, to be young, everybody's like, hey, do my internship. Are you going to pay me? No. Why would I give you money? Because you're working for me? No. No, I'm not going to give you any money.
I still fall into the category of people who would be like, it'd be good exposure for you. I'm like, fucking Google me. No. I don't need exposure. I'm the only Jessica Utrovsky. I'm the most famous Utrovsky. Fuck off.
Yeah, totally. And that's an appropriate response.
Thank you. A professional. You just validated that. You created a monster. I was going to say, fail fast, fail often.
Nice.
I love that. And, and that's what I was trying to get at when I was saying, like, go quickly towards a goal if you feel pulled to do
so. Here's a last note of inspiration. I had a session of very successful hypnotherapy earlier today with an executive in a high-powered job who makes a ton of money who recently fucked up huge.
Is he listening to this?
They are not listening at the moment, although they might be. And if they are, hello. I'm not including any details here. The whole story is going to last another 5 seconds. And it's just this, that fuck up ended up being very valuable in terms of what it's teaching people and what they're learning from it, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the most important points in the conversation we had was, what a wonderful thing, actually. Talk about privilege. The ability to fuck up huge learn from mm-hmm. it, keep your job, and keep going. Yeah. Most of us don't have, yeah, oof. Yeah, most of us cannot afford a major fuck up, you know? So mm-hmm. I love what you're saying there. Fail big, fail often, fail fast, especially when you're young and you don't have much on the line. You know, when you don't have yep. much on the line and there's not much to lose, just keep fucking experimenting.
Yeah.
And to be continued. And thank you for listening to this episode of Mind Space Minimal.
Bye, guys. Visit us at mindspaceminimal.com and email us at mindspaceminimal@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening.